Hi, friends. This is Brock Polk, and I want to thank you for downloading this sermon from Heritage Church of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. Our mission is to lead others to a thriving relationship with Jesus. And if you're ready to take a next step in your faith journey after you listen to this message, you can contact us through our website at www.heritagechurchofchrist.org. God bless you, and I hope you enjoy the following message.
Well, I'm really glad you're with us this morning for the next message in our Life Remodeled sermon series that we started last week. I figure probably everybody in this room at least once or twice has seen one of the real popular television shows that's on these days about remodeling houses and how popular it is to watch somebody take a house that's old or run down or just out of date and go and totally give it a facelift or even a demolition and start over. But they take it and they say, you know, we're going to take a wall out here and we're going to update the colors here and change the decor and the floor plan and all of that so that this thing can have a breath of fresh air and really be renewed and restored for a new phase of its life. And last week in our series, we heard from one of the writers in Scripture written 2,000 years ago, a guy who had spent time with Jesus, who basically said God has a vision and a plan and a desire to do a similar remodel in your life and in your heart. God's got a dream to be able to take your life and everything it is that you've tried to make it and say, let me work with that a little bit and make it a whole lot better. Now, I wondered this week if that sounds a little bit pushy to you on God's behalf, that God would think, oh, I've got all these ideas of how I'm going to change your life. Because I thought, you know, if I walked into your house and I started making recommendations, I'm not sure how much you would like that, right? Like if I walked into your kitchen and I said, I'm not sure why you chose that tile. Why would you do that? Let's do something different in here. Or have you ever thought about taking out this wall? Or what about this paint color? If I start coming into your house and questioning all of the decor choices and the layout choices that you've made, you might not like that advice, right? I mean, that's unsolicited input from me. But the thing is, God's not like that at all. You see, God does not force His desires on you in your life. God is not forcing His will onto you. He's giving you the chance to choose for yourself. What God does do is He stays ready and He makes Himself available. You see, God is waiting on every single one of us to come to the realization that we could use some help, to come to the realization that our lives could use some remodeling, some assistance. God is waiting for us to see the need. And then when we do, God steps in with the power and the plan to turn our mediocre lives, our self-centered lives, our small-thinking lives into world-changing, totally different, purposeful lives that we were designed to live. And so the best thing that you can do to allow God to get to work, the best thing you can do to allow God to start making His dream for your life a reality is to acknowledge the areas of your life where you could use some help. To kind of do some self-inventory, to look at the life that you have created living for yourself and think, you know, I wonder, maybe that could use a renovation. Maybe that could use a demo and a redo. I mean, you got to look at yourself. You got to look at your habits. You've got to look at your history. You've got to ask yourself, how would the people that know me best describe me? What would they say are my priorities? What would they say are my passions? What am I doing on a regular basis that occupies my thoughts and my time? How do my habits affect the people that live in my family, the people in my community? What is the foundation on which I am building my life? And sometimes you have to look at that and think, that needs to be changed. About 11 years ago, I was on a mission trip with the student ministry group, the youth group from our church, from this church. And we went down to Mexico, and the entire focus of our effort for that week was to build the first floor of a church building out of cinder blocks, okay? Now, that sounds like, you know, a really benevolent, you know, kind idea, but then you remember that all of the workers on this thing are high school students from Fort Worth, you know, and they don't have any experience building with cinder blocks. And so we worked really hard. We tried to do everything right, you know, tried to be careful. But by the end of the day, you could look at the wall that we had built. Well, it's generous to call it a wall. You could look at the structure that we had built and you could see a bit of a lean to it. And you thought to yourself, I don't think it's supposed to look like that. And then you thought, I don't think I would want to go inside the building that has a wall that looks like that. And so we did what you have to do with a structure that's unstable. We had to knock it down. We had to start over. And so the second day, they brought in an older guy from the area who had done that kind of brickwork his entire life, and he knew what he was doing, and he showed us how to stack the bricks, and he showed us how to mix and apply the mortar, and he worked alongside of us. And what we had built was definitely not safe. It was going to be destroyed, whether somebody did it intentionally or a catastrophe came through and hurt somebody. But what he helped us build was so much better. And you got to ask yourself about your own life. Okay, I've built a lot of my own life doing things my way, following my instinct and using my know-how. But there's some of this that just doesn't look right. Some of this that doesn't seem like it's going to work. Some of this that seems like it could be damaging to me or to the people around me. And you've got to ask yourself, am I in for a lot of pain just continuing doing things my own way? Am I causing pain for people that are around me? And you start asking those questions and you start identifying some areas of your life that could use a remodel. And in fact, this morning, I think relationships are a fantastic place for us to start looking at our lives together. Because the only thing that we've all got figured out about relationships is that nobody has everything figured out about relationships. Can I get an agreement on that, right? I mean, nobody has this entirely figured out. And even when you think that you're making progress in one relationship, there are others that you just think, oh, that's not going the way I want it to go. Everybody knows that relationships can provide some of life's greatest memories, some of the most incredible comforts and the deepest meaning. You look back on your own life, you remember as a child, some of your favorite memories were made with a best friend or a sibling or a cousin, somebody that you loved playing with, and every time y'all were together, you had a good time. You look back on your own childhood and you can remember when caring adults took care of you, maybe a parent or a grandparent or another relative took care of you when you were sick or you were injured or you were afraid, and that relationship made all the difference. If you are blessed to have children, you know that those children can give you such a sense of meaning and purpose at times in their life, you know. And you look and you think those relationships can mean so much. But as good as relationships can be, can't they also be a great source of pain and frustration? Can't relationships also be a great source of heartache and disappointment in your life? And that goes for everybody. It starts early because you remember back to that same childhood and you can remember words that were said to you that were meant to hurt. When people teased you and everybody got teased about something, you can remember back to things that people said about you that hurt. You can remember the pain of your first broken relationship. Maybe it was a friendship or a boyfriend-girlfriend situation, and you thought, I don't know if I'm going to get over that. You can probably remember some of the things that you did and some of the things that you said that hurt somebody else. And the truth is that every one of us has a trail of damaged relationships, sometimes broken relationships that we have left in our wake as we have gone through the years of our lives. We've had friendships that ended on a sour note. We've got family relationships that are not nearly as cordial as we would like them to be. We have all had relationships that started out full of potential and ended up full of problems, right? I mean, we've been there. And I don't know anybody who's able to avoid that, who has been able to completely avoid that. But imagine, I want you to imagine as we talk about remodel, as we talk about renovation, imagine if our relationships could be built on a different foundation. Imagine what would have been possible for some of your damaged relationships if the connection had been characterized by patience and kindness all the time. Imagine what would be different if two people in a relationship decided that we're not going to allow envy and pride to ever be a part of our connection with one another. Imagine if two people who loved one another decided we're not going to allow anger to go unreconciled between us. We're not going to hold one another's shortcomings against one another. Imagine that. Well, the same guy we read from last week, Paul, this follower of Jesus, he used words like that to describe what true love, real love, really is. Among other things, he said love is patient. He said love is kind. It's not envious. It's not self-seeking. You know, that's not the kind of relationship advice that I'm accustomed to hearing in our culture. To be patient, kind, not self-seeking, not envious. That's not the kind of stuff I hear. Those are not the priorities I hear from the most popular music and all of the reality TV shows. In a culture that writes and sings and obsesses about the value of love and the ways of love, you don't hear many suggestions to trust and forgive and serve one another. That's not the theme. And the broken relationships, the broken friendships, the broken families are so prevalent that you can see our culture having its effect. Humanity has a relationship problem. And every single one of us is experiencing the problem. We're experiencing the pain of this problem. But God says it doesn't have to be this way. God's got a solution, an update, a remodel for the way that we do relationships. And if you'll let God work on your heart, it can improve the course of every one of your relationships. And so this morning, to discover part of that plan, I want us to take a look together at a passage in the New Testament book of 1 John. So if you've got a Bible with you, a Bible on your smartphone or your tablet, you can join us there. When you look in the table of contents of the New Testament, we're going almost all the way to the end of the Bible. Like in the last five books of the Bible, there's three of them strung together called 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. And we're going to be in 1 John this morning. It's written by a guy named John, right? That makes sense. Written by a guy named John, who was among the people that spent more time with Jesus face to face than maybe anybody else in history. This was one of Jesus's original disciples. And when Jesus was hanging on the cross, dying, bleeding, in pain, he looks down at this guy, John, and he says, "Will you take care of my mom?" That's how close John and Jesus were. John was there for, excuse me. John was there for some of the most famous and most memorable moments in all of Jesus' life. John was one of the two disciples who ran to the tomb on that first Easter morning and went inside and discovered that the body was gone. The tomb was empty, which means John had a unique perspective on everything about Jesus because he had been with him. He had spent time with him. He had seen all of the most incredible moments. And so you fast forward. Years after the resurrection, John is working with churches and he's writing these three letters to a church that is struggling with relationships, struggling with personal relationships that are dissolving and having trouble, and John's going to give them some encouragement, give them some feedback, some advice, and he focuses on the message of Jesus and the example of Jesus and the gift of Jesus to explain to these people what God's plan is for their relationship. You see, John had learned a lot in his time with Jesus. He'd heard the sermons. He had seen the miracles. He had been there for the big events. But maybe more than anything else, what John had learned was that Jesus just loved him. Like John had learned about Jesus' love In fact, in some of his other writings, John refers to himself as the disciple that Jesus loved. He doesn't even say John. He just says the disciple Jesus loved was in the room. You know, he's talking about himself. And all the scholars agree he's not saying Jesus didn't love the other people. He's just saying that's just all I could feel when I was with Jesus. I always felt loved. I always knew that he cared for me. And John says that's the kind of love, that's the kind of connection that ought to describe the relationships between people who are connected to Jesus. Listen to how he puts it. 1 John chapter 4, you'll have to flip a page or two. 1 John chapter 4, we're going to begin in verse 7, and here's what John says. He says, "Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. And whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. If you don't know love, you don't know God." It's like John is saying, listen, this is at the heart of everything we're supposed to be about. Love is at the heart of our entire faith. It's the goal. It's the barometer for each one of us as we try to live out our life's calling. We are supposed to be people who love one another. And if love is missing, if love is absent, if love is declining, if love is breaking down, then that's like an indicator. It's like a measurement for us that says, wait, I'm not where I'm supposed to be. Think about what he says here. He says, love comes from God. See, and we thought love came from like the heart or from hormones or something like that, you know? Like everybody thinks they know how to love somebody. Everybody thinks that that just comes natural, that I can do that if I find the right person, if it's the right circumstances. Everybody thinks I know how to do that. After all, I've been loving my parents, I've been loving my friends since I was a kid. But there are different types of love, different levels and expressions of love. And we're talking about something bigger. It's more than the feeling you feel when your favorite song comes on. It's more than the way you feel about your favorite food. That's not even close to the kind of love John is describing. You see, here's the thing. Everybody knows how to express possessive love. Possessive love is the kind of love that wants to have something, wants to get something, wants to use something. Possessive love is all about what I can take. And children, even young children, are capable of expressing possessive love. And you can see it in the way they respond when people give them presents, all right? Smart grandparents have learned this secret. Smart grandparents have got this figured out because they have discovered that you can buy the love of a child, right? I mean, and so, like, if a grandparent is wise, they will show up every time they see those grandchildren with something wrapped in shiny paper, right? And if they do that, they can buy the love of that child, and it lasts. It's pretty awesome, and there's nothing wrong with that strategy, but it works because that's the kind of love that a child is capable of. But there's another level. There's another level beyond that. It's called reciprocal love, and this love does well when the relationship is mutually beneficial, when it's mutually satisfying. Reciprocal love is about give and take. It's about a transactional connection. This is the kind of love that starts to grow in the heart of a child when they finally get to the age and think, you know, I probably ought to get a gift for my grandparents too. You know, after all of those years of the grandparents showing up with the presents and all that, and then the kid reaches an age and they say, you know, maybe I ought to pick out something for grandma and grandpa. And there are lots of relationships where that's kind of the norm. It's a transactional thing. There are relationships between adults that get stuck in this level because reciprocal love is happy as long as I'm getting something in return. But that's not what John is talking about. That's not the kind of love that John saw demonstrated in those years when he was with Jesus. That's not the kind of love that led John to refer to himself in the third person as the disciple that Jesus loved. Because he wasn't giving anything to Jesus that was helpful. He describes love this way. Listen to what it says in verse 9, chapter 4, verse 9. This is how God showed his love among us. God sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. He says God gave something. Not because we could give something in return. God showed his love by giving something. He says this is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us. And he sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. See, John watched Jesus live this. John watched Jesus love in a way that was totally different than anything he'd ever seen. He watched as Jesus dispensed compassion and food and healing and help and prayer to people who had nothing to give him in return. He watched as Jesus chose not to retaliate when people treated him terribly. He watched as Jesus sacrificed himself for the sake of people who hated his guts. He watched that. He listened while Jesus was up there on the cross, bleeding and hurting and praying, God, forgive these people, because they're not aware of the implications of what they're doing. John saw all that, and he looked at that and he said, that's different than any kind of love I've ever seen. He saw Jesus doing something brand new. He saw an enduring love in Jesus. A love that doesn't worry about give and take. It just focuses on giving. It doesn't focus on what can I get from you? What are you going to do for me? It's a love that says, what can I do? By the power of what God has given to me, with the resources God has given to me, with the strength that God is going to give me for today, what can I give to somebody else? Enduring love. It's not an emotion of attraction. It's not based on calculated mutual benefit. This kind of love, this Jesus kind of love, it's an act of the will. It's a conscious decision to act in someone else's best interest. And you don't see it very often. I mean, you'll see shades of it. And everybody thinks at the beginning of a relationship that they're going to behave this way. But then things get difficult. Things get challenging and it's hard to stick with it. And the complete expression of this kind of love, that level of sacrificial commitment, it's so rare, it's so contrary to our natural impulse that you can really only see it by watching Jesus. That's the only place it's ever been on display. The world has never seen an expression of enduring love like the one we see in Jesus. He is the purest example. He is the only true demonstration of sacrificial love. And so the only way we can really understand the meaning of self-giving love is by coming to know Christ better. I want you to remember this morning, a true impression of Christ can produce in you a true expression of love. Because there are times in every relationship when you don't receive what you think you were going to get from it. And if you're going to continue to love, it's got to be a decision. It's got to be a commitment. It's not based on emotion at that point. It'll be your understanding of Jesus that gives you the knowledge of what to do in that moment. It'll be your devotion to Jesus that helps you have the commitment to follow through on enduring love in that moment. It'll be your faith in Jesus that gives you the courage to love even when that does not come natural, even when that seems maybe not in your best interest. It'll be your connection to Jesus that makes that possible. Because when you have the right impression of who Jesus is, the right understanding of what Jesus is all about, that's when you can embody the kind of selfless love that Jesus came to share. And I wonder what it would do to your relationships. I wonder if you can imagine. Can you imagine how your holiday gatherings would be different if the love that you give to everybody that's at your home was unconditional? If it's not based on what you're going to get, it's just selfless. It's enduring. It's not self-seeking. Imagine how different that encounter would be. Imagine what it would be like in your home if you and the people you live with were committed to love one another because of a conscious decision and not because of a current emotion. Imagine how things would be different. Imagine how your children's lives would be different if they knew, if they were confident that they didn't have to perform, they didn't have to achieve, they didn't have to accomplish anything to receive your love because you have decided to give it to them. You have decided that your love is a matter of your faith and not a matter of your feelings. Imagine how different your kids' lives would be. I want to say something to you this morning. If you're in the room and you're single, but you hope to not be single forever, I realize there are some of you who are single by choice, or God has given you the strength or this calling to live a single life, but some of you are single and you wish that wasn't your story. And I want to speak specifically to you. I want to ask you, can you imagine how powerful a relationship could be if you and the person that you found were both so understanding of the way of Christ that you love the way Jesus loves? I mean, it would change the relationship. It would change what's possible. It wouldn't be about mutual benefit. It would be about embodying the self-giving love the way that Jesus did. John says that's what we all ought to be about. I'm going to wrap up with this verse, verse 11. He says, "Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another." He says, God showed us the way. He sent someone to show us the way. And he says, and I was with him. I was with Jesus. And I saw that it's different and it's better. And it's a new story that'll change everything. It's a remodel that's worth it if you'll let God do the work in your life. And that's what I want to invite you to do. See, I believe your relationships can continue to improve, but it won't happen because God is working on this connection outside of you. It'll happen because God's working on what's inside of you. Because God's helping you understand the way of Christ, helping you understand self-sacrifice, helping you understand how complete you can be with God, and how you don't have to get that completeness from anybody else. I believe that can happen for you. But you have to take a step to invite God to start working on that.